Hi, everybody. This is Armand Demel with you, with The Positive Mind, here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life, getting to understand. Let's talk about systems theory. Systems theory. What is a system theory? Systems theory is a family system. It's a kind of psychological construct. I think I learned the first person. Well, wasn't it Jay Haley in Chicago? And what he said was, you know, you don't look at the individual. You look at the system and you try to find the way the person works within the system. That a family is a system. And everybody is a part of the system. Therefore, if you look at only one part of a system, you think you're looking at that person as if they are a system in themselves. And let me give you an example. You have a depressed child. And you think, oh, look at that child. So you take that child and you bring that child to a doctor. And you say to the doctor, look at this child. And the doctor is looking at this child as if it exists all on its own without the rest of its system. So sometimes you have to look at more than that. And as we presented yesterday, in the case of childhood acting out in both ADD as well as in depression, you look at the entire family, and there was enough evidence to suggest whenever there is a child who has got a significant problem acting out or depressed, either one, you can always find depression in the family. You can look back and you see one of the two parents are depressed. And in fact, they found that if you treated the parents for depression, the children's symptoms disappeared. Well, that's kind of remarkable. That's kind of amazing. I mean, in a significant percentage of people, not in all people, of course. So let's go a little further on systems. You begin to wonder what is the purpose everything is serving. I did some work with people who were parents of children with leukemia, childhood leukemia. They were doomed. I mean, these kids were going to die. And for as long as they were alive, the parents would be very involved in the child's well-being. Funny thing about this is when the child died, the parents almost inevitably divorced. Now, why would that be? You see, we didn't understand the system and the way the system was working. In any family, when you have one member that is seen as the sick person in the family, the entire family kind of dumps all their stuff on that person. Think about your own family. You got somebody in your family who's a problem child. You know, it could be your mother, problem child. It could be your grandparents. I remember in my family once I saw them all gather. And on one side of my family, which is very Italian, there was 26 members were gathered to deal with the fact that one of my nieces got pregnant. And the entire family got together to deal with this problem. But you could see how much energy they were putting into this thing that could have been handled in a much simpler way. And you could see the entire family was involved in some kind of a distraction. Like they wanted to get outside themselves, to get into somebody else and deal with a problem. Well, very often that happens. So what I'm suggesting to you, my friends, is whenever you see an individual problem in a family, look and ask yourself, how does it serve the system? How does it serve the family? Here's another example. You have a couple. And you see this couple, and in this couple, the man or the woman, let's say it's the man, because it usually is the man in this case, is some kind of a real nasty guy. Nasty guy, spits out anger all over the place, aggressive, you know, controlling, mean. Just mean. And people all think he's, you know, he's a terrible guy. Everybody says, oh, what a disgusting guy. He's so nasty. He speaks so badly. And they get married to a very nice, very polite, very giving, very easygoing mate. So now you have a system. You have this aggressive guy and this non-aggressive kind of innocent wife. It's a system. What happens when they break up? He becomes less aggressive and she becomes more aggressive. What does that indicate? That when they're together, they are serving each other in a way. He becomes her hired gun. He's expressing all the anger that she needs to express but is not expressing. And she represents his innocence. Funny thing. Systems theory. Think about everything as a system. Someone I know yesterday brought to me the attention that she had a parent who had Alzheimer's disease. And she said, that parent of mine was terrible. She said, it's my father, and he was horrible to me. And I could never make any inroads with him. There was never a chance to even get close to him, even forgiving him for the misery that he gave me. And then he got Alzheimer's. And that Alzheimer's let everybody get close to him before he died. Because now he was kind of powerless and weak, because he had the disease. So illness, very often, can become a way of getting a family to heal itself. Very often, somebody in the family has a tragedy for no explainable reason. Look at the system. So an illness in a family very often serves the whole family. And sometimes what you do is you treat, what most people do is they treat the individual with the illness instead. But what you've got to do is treat the whole family. Do you know what Munchausen by proxy is? Munchausen syndrome, which is kind of an interesting thing, is a mother who kind of brings her child around to different hospitals and different doctors to get attention to the child because she's the one who wants to get the attention. So she creates the illness in the child. She'll actually create the illness, too. She'll make the kid sick. And she'll bring the kid into the hospital so that she could get the attention. It's part of a system. It's a crazy part of a system, but it's part of a system. In triangulation, there's a mother, a father, and a daughter, right? A mother and a father, they have a child in the middle. And one wonders, why does she hate mommy and love daddy? And why does daddy always making excuses for her? And mommy saying, you got to discipline her in some way. And what is this system of triangulation? Why aren't the two parents together? Well, according to systems theory, the illness is in all three people. That you see, the father doesn't know how to get close to his wife. The wife doesn't know how to get close to her husband. They don't know how to do it. They've probably gone through life being damaged enough that they don't want to get close, so they throw the kid in the middle. And the kid becomes a ping-pong ball so that they could always be at their match with a net between them. You know, they always want to be have something between them. Mom and dad have a sister, have two children, and they set up the whole children. The system, again. If you're involved in a system and you look at a system, like if you're in a family and you're the oldest child, it's inevitable that you will become somebody who takes care of the younger children. Now, it's not always inevitable, but if a parent feels like they can't really take care of their kids, they wind up assigning these roles to different people. So what happens if you have a husband who's a good, hard worker and a wife who's a good, hard worker mother, and then they have an older child, and then they have a bunch of younger children? Somewhere down the line, around the third child, you get a rebel. And what's this rebel doing there? How did that person wind up being so rebellious, being the alcoholic, being the drug user, being the hippie, being whatever they become? Because they're saving the family. Because on some level, if the family kept going the way it was going, it would implode from its sameness. All of you people who live in these wonderful waspy homes, many of whom listen to WBAI, believe it or not, wonder why your entire community is so calm, and then all of a sudden somebody in the community acts freaky. Because the system goes beyond the family, it very often goes into the community as well. One person in the community acting strange somehow could be a safety valve for the entire neighborhood. Look, it happens in politics. Think about it in politics, you know. Well, let's start with a forest. I mean, it's so natural. Think of the forest as a system. It's an entire system. And every piece is a part of what they call the ecostructure. Every piece is a part of the system. And so the forest burns its own trees down to make room for new trees. It sets fire to itself. Sometimes I think that's what we humans are doing. I think we're setting fire to ourselves to make room for new humans. You know, that's the way we act. But of course, if you look at the whole system, you get an idea and you begin to understand. And if you have been listening to The Positive Mind, you understand that one of my skills is to see systems, is to understand an entire environment that people come from. But if you only see a small part of a system, like, let's say you were in a jungle and you didn't consider the entire thing. You know, think about being a deer. If you're a deer, you say, boy, in my forest, in my jungle, I'd like to get rid of all the lions. We'll get rid of the lions, and then we'll have only deers. And there'll be no predators. Now, wouldn't you, my friends, all of you who watch the nature shows, wouldn't you wish there were no lions there? Don't you hate the part where the lion's chasing the antelope? You know, and you say, oh, I hate that. That should be outlawed. So then you have deers who believe in their system that they should only have deers and they should have no lions. And what they wind up doing is they wind up overpopulating. And there's not enough food and they wind up starving to death and then fighting amongst each other in a kind of a savage way. They reproduce the lion in themselves, which we've seen animals do. Killing each other for the last scrap of food. Bambi. Right? So let's say you're not a deer, right, and you're a vegetable. And let's say you're an eggplant in a forest. But the deer are always eating you. And you say to your brother eggplant, listen, let's not have any deer. In my forest, I would have only eggplants and no deers. Well, what would that be like? You'd be an eggplant, and you'd have to have all eggplants, and they'd reproduce all over the place, and you'd have a forest full of eggplants, and eventually they'd drink up all the water in the soil, and the place would starve to death, and everything would kind of die, because you didn't have the deers. See? Or if you have too many deer, they eat up all the plants, and the plants don't have a chance, so we have an ecostructure, so this is the way it works, my friends. For everything bad in the world, there's a balance. Think about your government. Think about Democrats and Republicans. Remember when we only had Democrats and Republicans? We said that was our political system. And we said that'll work, the Democrats and the Republicans. You put them in the Senate, and they check each other. You can't really pass a rule, because if you pass a law, the other group is going to make noise. Hopefully there's a balance between the two. And that's the way it works. It's a system. It's not just a place, it's a system. Checks and balances. And you know who's included in the checks and balances? The lobbyist. The lobbyist who's outside the door, who's trying to convince people to vote one way or another on things, is willing to give money to the politician secretly so that they will vote on his bill, or he works for a drug company or something. And then there's the crooked lobbyists. Then there's the crooked politicians. The ones who take money for voting or not voting on things, you know, the ones we read about occasionally, they're part of the system too. Because it's like they're the vultures. You see, if you don't have the vultures eating the dead meat, right, then it's kind of laying around the jungle and it's not going to use. So in that ecostructure, in that thing, in everything we do, in our world, you've got to consider the entire system. I'm not saying anything is justified, but I'm saying it's there, and it's there for a reason. I mean, a lot of people would do away with mosquitoes, but then who would pollinate the flowers? You know, or people would do away with unattractive animals at times. Our government is like the jungle, as you know. If we even think about our government there right now, here's a curiosity for you. If you were assigning roles of the government, let's say we took our current government and we made them animals in the jungle, what would they be? What would George Bush be if he were an animal and we had a jungle and he was the head of the jungle, right, currently? What animal would he be? And he could be any animal. Because any animal can make head. Even deers could do it if they're smart enough. You know, just because they're a little... I think Condoleezza Rice looks like a deer, doesn't she? Right? Doesn't she have this kind of deer-like look about her? A cagey deer. Right? I think George Bush, and then what about Donald Rumsfeld? What do you think he would be? How about Dick Cheney? What animal would you put? You just play this game a little bit. If you had to ascribe each one an animal, which one would you pick? We did a little survey here. Here's what kind of came up. Some people said George Bush would be a jackal. You know, it's quite an animal. If you think about the animal, the jackal, it's a wily animal, you know, and it kind of laughs a lot. Kind of fits. They saw Rumsfeld as a big snake. They thought of him as a kind of a really big snake, like kind of this powerful anaconda kind of thing. And they thought of Cheney as a vulture. Somehow that's the association that people got. Now you see these are negative things, but these are just God's beings. Armando Mill here with you with a positive mind. I tell you to look at the systems because it's very important to understand the systems. One of the most things to understand about the systems is what we do to our children. When we isolate our children and we say our children are sick, there's something wrong with them. This society, this culture, and the system has made our children, revved our children up with all the TVs and video games, and we've gotten to the place where the children need the treatment, and the treatment of choice has been for children Ritalin. Well, I did a little research on Ritalin, and some recent, more and more information comes out. New York Times yesterday, a panel advises disclosure on drug psychotic effects, and they focused on Ritalin, and they have an advisory committee recommended that the Food and Drug Administration say that Ritalin has led a small number of children to suffer hallucinations that include insects, snakes, or worms, and they see them crawling and creeping all over the place. Now, that's one of the symptoms. Drugs have been studied in hundreds of trials over 5 decades, and it's effective in many ways, but most experts are beginning to see it's overprescribed. And they're saying, Dr. Galperin, described the case of a 12-year-old girl who said that insects were crawling under her skin. Another child was found by his parents crawling on the ground, complaining he was surrounded by cockroaches. In both cases, the hallucination stopped the minute they took the Ritalin away. I'm not saying to you I know for a fact that Ritalin is a bad thing. But gee, you know what we learned yesterday is that if you have an acting out child, you have a depressed parent. So if it's a parent who's depressed and a child who's acting out or has ADD and you got to give a drug to somebody, I say give it to the parent. You know, I'd rather not give drugs to anybody, but if you're going to give it to the child, you may as well give it to the parent. Get the parent from being depressed. And if we have enough evidence now, which we do, that if you cure the depression of a parent, the child gets better, well, then what are we doing? In Germany, there's a movement to make Ritalin illegal. There is, in fact, a number of places. Colorado is working on banning Ritalin as a drug in Colorado. And a number of states are putting the brakes on it. They're putting the brakes on that and the antidepressants. They found a number of things about it that, you know, of course, people want to do something for their kids. You go home. Your son takes a sledgehammer and he's smashing his school books. screaming and throwing his papers all over the place because of his frustration. And you say to yourself, what can I do for my son? I love him. Look at what he's going through. His grades keep falling and he keeps losing attention. And you keep wondering what you could do, and you give him all the love and support you can, but he keeps showing himself falling apart. Of course you're going to say, well, maybe we'll follow that rule. Maybe we'll give him the Ritalin. Maybe we'll do that. Well, a number of people using one of the new brain sciences, neuroscience, 25 years ago when it was developed, started making a case for how they could spot ADD in children through neuroscience, and these people are now regretfully saying that by this mapping of ADD in the brains of children and identifying it, it somehow opened the door for this rampant prescribing of Ritalin that's gone out there. Here's some more facts about it. A consensus development panel conducted in 1998 by the National Institute of Health said that we have no independent valid test for ADHD, and therefore we have no real way of testing effectiveness of any medications. The 1995 DEA report noted serious complications associated with Ritalin, including psychotic episodes and violent behavior. Another 1995 DEA report stated that pre-exposure to stimulants, including Ritalin, in childhood may dispose these same individuals to cocaine addiction later on. Another report said that children can commit suicide during stimulant withdrawal. Let's say you put them on Ritalin to try to take them off. High incidence of significant incident of suicide. Violent behavior was demonstrated in April 16, 1999, when 15-year-old Sean Cooper, who had been taking Ritalin, opened fire at Notice Junior High School in Idaho, and then again on May 20th, when T.J. Solomon, 15 years old, who had been taking Ritalin, shot and wounded six classmates at Heritage High School in Conyers, Georgia, and in fact in every teenage case of shooting or outburst of violence, Ritalin has been present. Uh-oh. Package insert for Lovox, which is one of the serotonin reuptake inhibitors, lists manic reactions and psychotic reactions and frequent adverse reactions as part of the warning that people don't pay attention to. The American Academy of Child and Adolescent Psychiatry in May 1991 found that self-injurious ideation or behavior started or intensified during treatment with Prozac in a number of children. They were cutting themselves and hurting themselves. Increase in suicidal thoughts, another article. Another article, SSRI, which is the antidepressants, induced psychosis, accounted for 8% of all general hospital psychiatric admissions. Psychosis associated with antidepressants, 8% of hospital admissions? Whereas a psychiatrist and expert on psychotropic drugs stated in 1999 that mania is a psychosis which can produce bizarre, grandiose, highly elaborate, destructive plans, including mass murder, and can be triggered by the use of certain medications. And I could keep going on. One autopsy. You remember Eric Harris? Washington Post reported that Eric Harris began planning the massacre. Let me see, Eric Harris, he was seeing a psychiatrist and taking Lovox. At the beginning, he was taking an SSRI. And then he began planning the massacre. It would started right after he started taking the antidepressant. And an autopsy found a therapeutic level of Lovox in Eric Harris's bloodstream. Then another boy, Kip Kingle, was taking both Prozac and Ritalin together when he killed his parents in Springfield, Ohio. I guess we're a little, we have some evidence here, much of which, if you want any of these evidence stated to you, I could give you the information. Now, I'm saying this is one side of the story, my friends. It's just one side. It doesn't mean that Ritalin is evil. I can't tell. I really can't tell. I mean, I would prefer we don't give drugs to kids. I would prefer that we don't, that we try to find another way of loving our children, and we try to find some other way of helping them out. So I don't know if you should mess with them at all, and I am not saying to you, I know for a fact that Ritalin is an evil drug. It just doesn't sound too good. You know, I mean, and this may be a small percentage of what happens, but even for the small percentage of what happens, it's too much for me. I would not send my child to taking Ritalin. I would not have that happen. You know, on the 1 in 200 risk that he would become psychotic or suicidal. You know, I don't know. So this is Armando Milwizzi with the positive mind. Yet, these drugs are part of the system, you see. And if you look at a system and you look at an entire system, you could see that the child's behavior is part of the family problem. Wherever you have a good kid and a bad kid, there's a whole system working here. And it's even in your family. It's like if you and your wife have a big disruption. You could say your wife is crazy, but you're going to find that you're crazy too. And by crazy, I mean there's stuff that you're denying, feelings you're not dealing with, intimacies you're afraid to have. You got to look at the whole picture. If you look at the whole picture, if you dare look at the whole picture, you could find your part in it, which is so important, instead of blaming people. Armand DeMille with you with a positive mind. I want to hear from you and your understanding of the system that you're in. What system are you in? What is the system that you're in? Are you part of a family system? Are you living, for example, somebody told me she was living in a building. And in this building, there were a number of people who were making a lot of noise. And some people were winding up irritating other people. And there's a fight going on, and she's not a part of it. She said she's not a part of it because she has the lowest apartment. And she says this entire system, this family, this kind of people who are tenants are arguing with each other, and it's really something, and the owner, who is also the landlord doesn't do anything about it. And we did a little tracing in her family, and we found when she was a kid, she lived in a family that had the very same system. They used to argue, and she used to stay out of it. And her father did nothing about it. Exactly what she was living with now. So what does that mean? If you are part of a dysfunctional system, you're going to tend to repeat that dysfunctional system later in life. If you've been part of a family that was dysfunctional and you become one way with your dad and your mom and the way they all treat you, you're going to wind up reproducing that in your relationship with somebody else. Do you ever notice your husband and wife, it's all the same over and over again? You keep picking the same people and doing the same things? Because you're in that system and you're recreating the system. That's what we want to look at. It is not easy. So all of this heavy information that I bring to you today, my friends, I hope is value to you. A value to you. Can you still hear me? There you go. There I am. Hope this is all of value to you. We're going to take a short break. And, hey, you know, I wanted to play something for you, a piece of music from the past that is related to systems theory. There's a group that kind of slid in the 60s, 50s and 60s. It was called the Modern Jazz Quartet. And they had this tremendous respect for Django Reinhardt. Django Reinhardt, who was a guitar player, is great, great. And they created a piece of music that they dedicated to him. Now, these are just four guys. Four guys, vibraphone, piano, drums, and bass. And they created a sound, an incredible sound that showed you how a system works. I think a good jazz band, is perfect system. It's system. There it is right there, because the music working together, the same with all great music. When all the pieces go together, when they have their umami, then, my friends, you are seeing great systems. So we're going to take a short break. When we come back to you, we will play you a little of Milt Jackson's Django, and then we'll continue our calls. We'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. It's 212-209-2900 as soon as we get back.
W-B-A-I, 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 New York, New York, New York, New York, W. We're the New Orleans Jazz Vipers at WBAI New York City.
down, and that's the great work of the Modern Jazz Quartet, my friends. If you're somebody who's been a jazz aficionado for years and you have never heard of the Modern Jazz Quartet, it's very sophisticated stuff and very pretty stuff, but it is a perfect system. You know, they kind of came out around the time that Dave Brubeck came around, another incredible system. But this is Milt Jackson, John Lewis on piano, Kenny Clarke on drums, a very, very remarkable, sophisticated drummer. If you listen to his work, you hear this kind of subtle, 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 perfect work. And Percy Heath on bass. So, me sure, you know, tune in. This is not a bad place to spend your time. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking, if you just tuned by, we've been talking about systems and the way systems work, the way the political system work. If you try to picture yourself as part of the system, just imagine you took where you're seating now, and you did a little map, and you put yourself in the circle of it, and everybody you're attached to in one form or another. You're connected to your husband, your wife, your brothers, your sisters, your uncles, your aunts. And you did your entire genealogy. You had your whole chart in front of you, if you ever took the time to do this. And then, if you could put on that chart everybody who's attached to anybody else who's attached to you, you know, and you'll find how big the system is and how a little change somewhere in the system could easily affect you because the balance goes off. Now, I wonder what, sometimes I think systems are evolving, and I wonder what the next evolution is going to be. Like, you know, for example, if something burns down in a forest, you say, okay, these are trees that have caught on fire, and they're clearing themselves out, and then somehow you see it's not the same tree that grows back, but a different tree. Some other tree got under the roots there, and I watched this happen somewhere out in Long Island. I watched this where there was a big fire, and then after the fire, years later, the trees that came back were not the trees that were there. A different kind of tree got underground and decided to take dominance. So I wonder that about us. You know, are we destroying ourselves in some way so that we could destroy ourselves so that another us could emerge? A different us? What kind of system are we living in where there is no longer real resistance to what seems to be a very heavy hand that we don't agree with? And the resistance is totally inefficient. It doesn't do anything anymore. And so anything that the big hand wants to do, we're kind of sitting by, letting it happen, which we wouldn't have done years and years ago. But the system is working this way now. The system is working so that we're kind of, I think, you know the way it's working? It's feeding a lot of people, too. I think the way it works is those who would have protested because they had lost too much, because it was costing them too much, there are enough people now who are inner city people who are doing the benefits and getting some of the benefits of this system. They're making more money. They're getting more cars. You know, they're traveling more than they used to. They have their own cell phones. And somehow you acquiesce because you don't have the kind of pressure on you that you used to have. So a new system has got to emerge. If we sit around and we look at it and we go, oh, my gosh, what are we going to do now? We're going to invade Sicily. You know, we're going to do something next. We're going to find a new enemy somewhere. You know, right before the election, as you could anticipate, right before the next election, we've got to find some way to keep the incumbents going, and we've got to find the evil forces in Corsica. You know, and we'll have to send our armies over, and, you know, we'll do something like that. But we'll have a system that will do this for a period of time, and then we'll burn ourselves out, and then a new system will grow. Wonder what it's going to be. Maybe it'll be eggplants. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. 212-209-2900. With you Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays at 1 o'clock. You could also contact me, and feel free to contact me by email, because sometimes I'm just so silly I need you to put me in my place. 212, it's Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at BrainLink, BrainLink.com. Just write to me. There's a website there called thepositivemind.com, and we're working on something. Tom Gerby is coming up with something for you, my friends. I can't believe it. I think it's going to happen any day now. You know the music that you love so much? There is now going to be a way of going on the website, going to every archive of every program, and getting the name of every piece of music I've played for a number of years. And you people seem to love that music and want that archive, so you will get it. You'll be able to have your own, make your own CD of my Footlight favorites, or whatever you call them. 212-209-2900. Armand DeMille, let's take one of your calls. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hello?
Hello there. Thanks for waiting.
Oh.
You have to turn down your radio now.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Well, we caught you by surprise. You
yes, were, and especially since I was listening to the radio, there's a delay now that didn't used to be there.
Of course. How long have you been waiting to be on?
Not long.
Oh, good.
Not long this time. I think the last time I tried, I just dialed and didn't get through. But I'm an adult who has been not exactly officially diagnosed with attention deficit disorder a couple of years ago. I have I'm unemployed and don't have insurance, and I'm having a hard time actually getting to someone who could tell me for sure yes or no that's what I have. I was going to school part-time and saw the therapist on campus who recommended I take this test that's online for ADD, and, you know, make a long story short, I took it according to the test. I have it, and I've read books about it that sound like they're describing me pretty much. And if I don't have it, I have something that's very similar. Because I haven't been diagnosed or seen a psychiatrist, I'm not yet on drugs. And I don't know for sure if when the time comes if I'm going to take them or not. It's a little frightening to me what it might do to my head. And now that I'm listening to your show, I do have a lot of problem functioning. I'm a bright person who has a lot of ideas and goals and hasn't accomplished much. And I'm in my late 30s, and I start things and don't finish them, and forget things and have trouble keeping my belongings organized in a way I can get things done. And I was actually looking forward to trying some kind of medication. I thought it might solve my problems, but I don't know why I'm calling.
What's your name?
Sarah.
So you make a very reasonable claim here, and you're it's a very reasonable position. You are one of those people in the world who tend to start tasks and have a lot of plans, and you don't complete the tasks. And this makes up a full ninth. You know, one out of every nine people are the way that you are. And out of those nine people, if one out of every nine, think about in the entire population, what number that would be. How many people are on the planet?
I don't know.
4 billion people, 5 billion people. If one out of every nine have this kind of, they start things and can't complete them and they don't function too well, but they do know how to party. You know, I'll say that about you. You do know how to have a good time when a good time is offered, right?
I beat myself up later. Like, you know, why do I spend my time if I can spend, you know, half of the time I spend
later? You do
enjoying myself as, you know.
Okay, but this is a talent. You can enjoy yourself. You see, there are a lot of people out there who have their ducks so lined up that they can't enjoy anything because the ducks are in the way. You know, every time where they walk, they've got one of their lined-up ducks, and they trip over the ducks. And
well, I don't know. I might be.
You might like to try
that. Like that, too. I don't know. I'm not the person who's having, like, the most fun in the room, you know.
No, I understand that. Well, anyway, here's what I have to say to you. Sarah, one of the things that I would suggest you do is explore a better therapy. Now, as far as tests for ADHD and ADD, as far as those tests go, they're kind of loose enough that if you want to give it a diagnosis, which means that you can now take our drug called Ritalin or one of the other drugs, I mean, you're going to pass. Most nervous types of people will pass this test. But if you want to go to a therapy and find a therapy and find somebody who will work with you and see what that does, that might be really efficient. Now, I know you don't have a job, and I know you don't have any money, and I know a couple of therapists who are so dedicated that they charge very little money, like $25, you know, to see them, which is really as low as you could get.
Mm-hmm.
And you work with somebody for a while, and you see if trying to set goals and follow your goals, what happens. You could go to a goal-directed therapy, you know. So I would say try that first before you go getting on the medications theme.
Mm-hmm.
That's my suggestion. Because you don't sound like you're that far out, you know, and I could tell with my ears.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to know about that, call my office and I'll hook you up with somebody we know who is currently, at the moment, trying to help people out and willing to offer psychotherapy at a low rate.
Mm-hmm. Do they know about are they specialists in attention deficit or any of this? Or
yes,
just,
yes, yes. Most, uh-huh. most clinical professionals understand that
mm-hmm.
kind of disorder.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So anyway, it's a thought.
Okay.
And I thank
well, thank
you.
For you. I appreciate that very much.
And if anybody says that you're impatient, it's not true. You stood on the phone for a long period of time and you got through. And if anybody says you're effective, it's not true because you were effective in getting through today.
Okay.
Thanks
thank
for
you.
Calling in, Sarah.
Okay. Thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello?
Hello.
Yes. I was wondering, I'd like to... I was listening to the radio, your program about an hour ago, and you had a guest speaking about the Black Hills, and I was wondering if I could get a tape of that.
Well, no, I didn't have a tape. I didn't have a guest who was talking about an hour ago, you're saying?
Yeah.
You know, you call the station at 212-209-2800.
2800, okay.
Call them at 2800 and see what it is. What was the person talking about in the Black Hills?
About the radiation being released into the environment.
Uh-huh, and you wanted to get a tape of that, a recording of that.
Yes.
Okay, give a call to the station. They'll be able to get that for you.
209-2800?
Yes, 212.
All right, thank you.
Thanks for calling in. 212-209-2900 on the air right now. Let's take another call. Hi there, you're on the air. Hello there. I got you. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Wow, that was quick. yeah, I was just, I was really fascinated with the way you kind of portrayed system theory. I'm actually studying something very similar in Stony Brook. It's taught by a bio professor, actually, and it has like a biological basis. It's called, it's based on conflict theory. It teaches you how everything can be related to a system in terms of fighting for resources and group. And I just thought that was really interesting the way.
Yes. Now, what's the name of the system you're studying?
It's based on conflict theory, but it's called resource theory. They have names that kind of fall around it, but it's just based biologically on how. I guess that by and large that how humans in general kind of. That we evolved based on being able to collect resources better than other species,
mm-hmm.
and then as a result, I'm sorry, it's the first time I've been on the radio. So,
well, what's your name?
Jared.
Jared.
Yeah.
So, Jared, let me ask you something.
Yeah.
In your understanding of this, of my systems theory, or your resolution theory, or
yeah.
conflict theory, how do you see yourself in your family?
I see myself very a part of that, actually.
Are you the safety valve for the family?
No, actually, I'm more of the nervous type. I've actually gone to the other end. It was kind of interesting how you said that being treated a certain way by your parents, or by, you know, just in your family in general, you tend to reproduce those relationships. I definitely see a lot of that. Like, for example, I feel a lot of times my parents will be nervous just because I tend to be disorganized myself, that they'll tend to, they need to remind me, so I can't, there's not, maybe there's a balance of power, there's a problem with that, there's an issue with, I guess, a healthy relationship. They kind of always feel they need to be on top of me.
Isn't that something? And
now
what happens when you step out of the picture?
What's
that? When you step out of the picture, do they at least get on top of each other? That would be nice.
Yeah, I'm seeing it like just in different parts of it, but until recently, I wasn't even able to take myself out of it because I thought it was about me.
Yeah,
very important. Learning about these things definitely made a difference for me, and it's just amazing how all these things tie together, even in terms of, like, attention deficit and the things we were talking about. Just...
Good. How old are you, Jared?
I'm 26.
Well, good. You're one of the ones who were getting it early enough so that you could sidestep, you know?
Yeah.
I always think that it's one of the best ways to deal in life is to learn how to do a little sidestep, a little shift. Here's the way I see it in life. You see life as being like kind of a cyclone. You know, you're standing in the middle of a typhoon. And if you try to run out of the typhoon's going to suck you up because you're right in the middle of it, you know, and you're safe as long as you're dead set in the middle of it. Some people try to bury their heads in the sand, but that's no good because the typhoon moves, and as soon as it moves, they get out of the eye of the typhoon, they get out of the eye of it, not the typhoon, the cyclone, they get out of the eye of the cyclone, and they get sucked up if they try to bury their heads. Other people try to rush through it and rush to the other side. Well, they get sucked up anyway. That the real art here is to learn how to dance with the cyclone, to kind of move from the inside of it, to move really, really gently.
And so I think that's a really good analogy. That's exactly what I'm kind of balancing now that I'm learning this, at least to attempt and try and take a little bit more, I guess, power for myself and have a little bit more confidence and, you know, not needing to be told or not needing to be checked on and, like, just learning the balance of not pushing too hard or not trying to be commanding, but at the same time being able to listen to somebody else. And
that's going to be great. So when your first child is born, you know, or when you have kids, right, I want you to look at them and I want you to have a banner on your wall which is going to be something that you hope one day to say to your child, which is, well, tell me what do you think, you know, as opposed to telling them what to do. Tell me, what do you think? Anyway, thanks for calling in, Jared.
All right, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Bye.
This is Armand DeMille with The Positive Mind. We got time for one more call. Let's try to get it in here. Hi, you're on the air. We'll take the other one. Hi, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Hi, I'm calling in reference to the burn-down woods theory.
The burn-down woods, yes. What about the burn-down woods theory?
And the regrowth of the tree.
Yeah.
Now, I was one of the parents that had never fought with my husband, and it seems he's now burning down his woods to have regrowth. But I was wondering what you would think would be the best skills for children so they wouldn't repeat that cycle.
Well, what do you mean? Cycle. How's he burning down the forest?
Well, we had a fabulous relationship for 20 years. And, you know, as you were saying about the people who never fought, the parents, you know, that the spouses who would never fight, then one day he turned 40 and went off the deep end. He left our relationship. He lied. I gave birth to our last child, who's 10 months old, on the living room floor. He abandoned us. He had adultery and abandonment and bought a BMW and just horrible, horrible things and lies and horrible things. And, you know, I know that my children have one good parent still, but I was wondering what skills you would suggest for me to give to the children so they wouldn't repeat that cycle.
The biggest skill, this is good. What's your name?
It's Jane.
Jane? Oh, yeah. I'm going to say one to you, Jane, that's going to be, you're going to hate me saying it.
Bring it on.
Okay, and I'm sorry, Jane, but here's what I really believe. The biggest gift you can give your children is to love their father.
Oh, I do.
Okay, here's, listen to me. Let me finish, Jane, okay? I understand you're angry. I understand he betrayed you. I understand all that stuff. But the biggest gift you can give your children is not to have them feel alienated their fathers. And
I fight for him to see them. He chooses not to.
Well, you see, even fighting for him to see them is part of the fight.
It's not that I fight.
I wish I had more time to go into it with you. Right. It's kind of stepping out of the middle to let everybody have what they need. And
they'll find it,
and I think your kids are going to find it.
I think my one son, the baby is too young, and my daughter right now is so angry. I tell her, you know, call your father. You need to talk to him. He's a good person. He made bad choices, but he loves you.
Yeah. Well, again, as I said, try to step out of the middle, and something's going to form is my suggestion. I think you're brave. I think you've done a great job. Wish I had more time to talk to you. Send me an email, armand@brainlink.com. I'm going to have to be going, my friends. This is Armand D'Amelio hearing Modern Jazz Quartet in the background from the album Django, D-J-A-N-G-O. I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m. of next week. Do get into our website there, thepositivemind.com. You could hear some of the old programs if you want. Old programs meaning like yesterday's program. I'll be back with you next week, Tuesday at 2 p.m.
Thank you.